all the people contribute all their energies when you're in a sweat, in a group sweat. You know, you never know what's you're gonna hear when you're sweating. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a planned agenda as far as, you know, what I'm gonna say. I speak what I'm led to say, and that's how it unfolds.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, real powerful, especially when you go to all the different rounds and the different doors, and you know, it's just an amazing experience. If you've never done a sweat lodge, folks, you'll have to try it sometime. It's just one of those magical places that you just kind of get in a little spaceship and just fly away. That's the way I look at it.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Actually, we had some really new people to the sweat.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, people have an idea of what a sweat lodge is and what that involves. And we had a couple new people walk through the yard, and I just felt like, hey, I needed to introduce myself, and I did. And they're like, you know, what are we doing? I asked them, I said, so, you know, hey, welcome. They're like, so what are we doing? And I'm like, so you don't know why you're here? And mm-hmm. they're like, no, we really don't know. And I really appreciate their honesty, because they really had no clue as to what they were going to experience. I mean, I didn't want to project my
right.
experiences onto them, so mm-hmm. I try to keep it as neutral as possible, telling them that this is medicinal, actual physical properties to a sweat. You know, a sweat is equivalent to, I think you shared with me, 30 days of fasting. That's how what it does to detoxify your system. Then there's a spiritual aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a spiritual aspect to it, and that's the part that they had no clue about, really. The spiritual aspect, and they said they'd never participated in anything spiritual before. And I kind of chuckled mm-hmm. because we experience
yeah.
spirituality every day and everything. Spirit
yeah,
is in everything.
Look out the window. Yep, absolutely.
But it was so interesting to just explain it in a way that I wasn't like giving them too much of a preconceived idea based on my experiences of the past
mm-hmm.
and sharing them just kind of like the facts. And, you know, you gave them a little piece of corn before we started, and they're like, what's this for? And
mm-hmm.
I said, oh, this is more symbolic, blah, 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 and so forth. But I thought it was just really, it was like dealing with the, interacting with like a childlike mind, which is really beautiful.
Yep. I mean, the whole process of the sweat lodge is, you know, bringing the masculine and feminine together. Because when you have males and females sweating, I mean, the whole thing just, you know, is just magical, because it's not one-sided. When females just sweat, you know, there's a certain aspect, and when males sweat alone, there's a certain aspect. But when you bring both parties in together, it's amazing what happens, because a lot of people, you know, don't realize that we're all one. You know, in the darkness, when it's pitch black and in that heat, there's no separation absolutely at all. I mean, we're all in it together, and we all suffer together, and we all sweat together. And that's what the sweat lodge has been for me, you know, just to learn different aspects of myself that I, you know, maybe was not aware of at the time. You know, I was not, like, you know, consciously aware of. And when you bring them both together, you know, you can't have one without the other, because you'll have a little bit of imbalance. I try to bring things into harmony for myself personally.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, you know, my husband actually participated in sweat. It's okay. He's here, and he knows I'm not sharing anything that he probably wouldn't share himself. You know, he came in with the intention. He goes, I don't even know I'm here. And I kind of chuckled, and I'm thinking, that is so typical. And, again, it's refreshing that people can, you know, be honest and maybe not really understand why exactly they might be participating.
Mm-hmm.
Their higher self, at some level, I believe, anyways, has guided them to that sacred ceremony for some reason.
Yeah,
maybe your logical, you know, because he's an engineer, the logical part of him may not be able to see it, but his higher self is like, you know, always showing up. It's funny. It's kind of trailing the kicking and screaming part along with him, but it was good.
Right.
And he's like, you know, I have a little bit of a headache. I had to go home, you know, early. He left the fourth round right when it was, you know. And I said, well, you know, I said, I can't, you know, tell you why and you're experiencing that. He goes, you don't have a headache, aren't you? I'm like, no, I'm actually very peaceful. And
right.
And there's, you know, perhaps there's a part of him that's just resisting, maybe. And but he was sharing with me that he had a challenge. He was saying, white man can't drum and talk at the same time, because he was was he had given him the duty to keep the heartbeat while we were in the lodge, and he was like working really hard to keep that heartbeat going, you know. And he's like, he goes, it was just an interesting experience. And I said, well, I said, that's great. You got to experience that, you know, or whatever, you know. So it's kind of funny just to reflect on the day, because it's a long day. I mean, we're there from, what, 9 in the morning to, like, 6 o'clock at night actually working towards building this ceremony.
Yeah. And I guess it leads us right into what we're doing about spirituality.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the divine feminine and the different aspects of the universe. And why don't you introduce our guest, Rosa?
Sure. We have an amazing guest tonight on With Insights Radio, Peter Canova. And I'll tell you a little bit about him. But I think that I'd like for him to share with us his journey. So I won't really talk about too much of his background, but he is going to be speaking to us about a book that he wrote. It's actually it's a trilogy, and it just we were just informed that the Pope Annalisa has won 2 Nautilus Awards. So we're in for an amazing treat here on With Insights Radio to be speaking with Peter tonight. Peter, we're going to be having a wonderful conversation. He's going to be sharing how he got on this journey, and also by all means, we want to hear all about the book, because it's quite an interesting topic, you know, being raised Catholic. it piqued my interest. So we'll see if we can't get Peter on with insights here.
Mr. Canova, are you with us there?
Yes. Hi, Iggy. Hi, Rosa. It's nice to be with you today, and it's also nice to realize I'm not the only one who's sweating, although it's because I'm in the California desert.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. If you don't mind giving us a little bit of a background, it sounds like you have a very similar background as far as you're an intuitive. You do medical readings and involved with psychokinesis. And I burned some incense in my studio, and it's just a little bit overpowering here. So please, if you don't mind, just kind of giving us some background, you know, how Spirit led you on your journey thus far and got you to this point of writing this amazing book.
Sure. Well, you know, I started off, I guess, as one of those kind of introspective, alienated feeling teenagers. And although that's not really uncommon, I guess what was uncommon was me was kind of an obsession in that I always sort of sensed that something seemed to be a little bit wrong about the world. I kind of wondered why the world wasn't really a better place. So it always made me, I guess, a little bit inquisitive and a little bit of a seeker. And this was back in, I'm dating myself here, but it was back in the 1970s that I came across a group that used to be very active back then. It was called Silva Mind Control. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes.
Well, it was actually a terrific organization. I think remnants of it are kind of still are around even today. But essentially, it was a program to teach you how to use your intuitive faculties, which they would have called ESP back then in the 70s. And I went through the week of the course. And in the very last day was a day that they did intuitive medical readings, and they would have index cards that were brought in by all the people who went through the course. And I think it was almost 500,000 people that attended those courses back in the 70s. So they had a big file of index cards of people who had either some kind of a physical or psychological issue, and you would bring in the name of a friend or a relative who might have a problem. You'd write the information down on the cards. Well, on the final day of the course, we would have 2 people that would go off in pairs. One of them would be holding the index card, and the only thing that they were able to tell you was the name, age, and location of the person on the card. They weren't allowed to say anything else to you. Now, the person who was doing the intuitive reading would be asked a couple of questions. The lead-off question was, what can you tell me about this person? And I remember very clearly the very first case I did. It was an elderly gentleman down in Miami. They just gave me his name and age. And I saw immediately, I got an outline, almost think of like an X-ray screen. And I got an outline of him, and I was immediately attracted to the area of the heart. And it looked like his heart was rather tilted at a funny angle, which was causing the aorta to be pinched. And so I said to the person, well, the first thing I see is it seems like this gentleman has a blockage in his aorta. And they're allowed to say, you know, yes, we have that information, or no, we don't have that information. They can't clue you or hint you in any way. So they said, yes, we have that information here. What else can you tell us? And I saw what appeared to be something metallic down the bottom quadrant of the heart. And I said, well, it looks to me like he's had something implanted like a pacemaker. And they said, that's correct, he has a pacemaker. Can you tell us what year the pacemaker was installed? And I saw the hands of a clock moving. Oh, they were just spinning around wildly, and then they stopped dead at 10 o'clock, which to me indicated 10 years earlier. So we were in 1975, and I said, well, I believe the pacemaker was installed in 1965, and that was correct. From that point on, I found that I had a facility at doing these intuitive readings, but the larger picture that it presents to me was it was such a an eye-opener and a relief, and it started to answer a lot of my questions because I really realized that we are all connected at an unseen level. We have a common source in another dimension, because how else could I possibly know this type of information unless I was tapping into a more universal source? So the very fact that I was seeing these things and they were being verified in the objective world was a tremendous boost to me spiritually, because I said, you know what, I now pass from the realm of theory into experience. I've experienced this, and this is something that I'll never let go of.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, go ahead.
I was going to say, and then from there, I happened to have my work in those days carried me all over the world. I was on four continents, and I was in Asia, the Near East, Africa, Europe, and wherever I would go, it was really kind of peculiar because unsolicited, I would have literally people coming up to me in the streets as if they knew me, and they're saying, "Oh, you're the, you're the boy who can see things and so forth." And I had a variety of, I don't know what you call them, guru, shaman, or whatever, that just sort of sought me out, and it was like I was a magnet for attracting these folks and talking with them. You know, kind of furthered my spiritual growth, and also those travels were really, I didn't realize it at the time, but they were going to become the basis of the book and the trilogy that I wrote, or at least the basis of you know, much of the underpinning of those books.
Indeed. So as you traveled, what got you to, what was the catalyst that got you to writing as a child? Were you always somebody that expressed yourself with written word?
You know, I'd always had a facility for talking with people and using the written word, especially persuasively. And in the business I was in, I handled, among other things, marketing for our companies, and I was used to using the language for those purposes. But I'd always, I guess for a long time, I wanted to write. I was successful in the business world, but it wasn't a world that made me very happy. It was more like I was conscripted into what started off as a family business, and it morphed into something bigger. But I was sort of tracked onto that, but another part of me was always tugging on the sideline. And I started going to writers' conferences while I was still working, just to sort of, you know, see what the writing world was about. And on the first couple of things I wrote at the writers' conferences, I won a couple of awards, which gave me a little bit of confidence that I might have some ability to write something that made sense to people other than myself. And then I was in a writing class one day, or a screenwriting class, and the instructor came in and said, I want you to do a high-concept idea and bring it in tomorrow. And by high-concept idea, she meant something that really had not been done before. Now, I found that a pretty challenging task, because almost everything we do or write is a permutation of something else. But I started thinking along lines, saying, well, okay, what haven't we seen before? And I guess because I was a spiritually oriented person, I started thinking, well, you know, we've never seen a female pope before. And, you know, what would that be like? What would the world be like? What would the church be like? What would things be like if a female ever became pope? So I started to think along those lines, and then because of the fact that I had lived in Africa, and there were certain themes that I started to arrive at in the book that seemed to segue really well with an African scenario, I decided to set the book in Africa, using an African nun as the primary character. So it was that sort of led me along that track. And then the book actually was written over, the first book was actually written over a period of about 10 years. But that was not consistent writing. It was part-time while I was traveling around on airplanes. My work was very time-consuming, didn't leave a lot of time and energy for writing, so I'd just write little snippets whenever I could. But my wife became ill, and she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I stopped work for a little, almost a year, in order to take care of her. And it was during that period of time, there was a lot of, obviously, emotion attached to a situation like that. And so the information was coming through me in a rather startling way. I burnt out 5 computers just by standing next to them. I had so much electrical energy coming through with, but the information that came through was a lot of the information that formed, you know, the real spiritual heart of this book during that period of time. And then I, you know, it took about, that was about 2 years. I really wrote the formative part of the book, and then when I retired from, you know, my business about 2 years ago, I put the finishing touches on it.
Cool. I was curious, you know, I mean, you say the reign of man has ended. I was really curious about that. That kind of jumps out at me a lot. I mean, I kind of watched your YouTube videos, and you're kind of explaining about the different aspects of God and the separation. You know, you were talking about Sophia. Oh, you weren't talking about it. The video was talking about it, Sophia and Christ. I was curious, can you talk a little bit of how this, I know you're talking about a female pope here. I get that. I understand that. But I'll kind of maybe a little backtrack a little bit and kind of talk to the listeners a bit about, you know, the religious aspects of this book.
The religious aspects?
Yes.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd say it's not a religious book. It's actually a book about spirit transcending religion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also not a Catholic book. The Catholic Church and the Pope are the vehicle for telling a broader story that I think has universal appeal to everybody. So I wouldn't have anybody get too afraid by the title and think that this is a book only for Catholics. It's part of a trilogy, incidentally, called The First Souls. And The First Souls is an epic saga about the first souls to incarnate into material experience from the spirit realm. And the trilogy traces their lives over different epics of history, beginning with the first book, Pope Annalisa.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
You know, when I in my meditations, and the book itself is really a combination of several streams. It's my own channeling, my own meditations, a lot of research, 25 years or more of research. You know, one of the things I noticed is that there was a universal spiritual tradition that really formed the underpinning of not only the major religions that we have today, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, and so forth, Buddhism, but it also was very common to what were known as the mystery schools in the ancient world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mystery schools, the most famous ones were probably that Europeans or Westerners would know, were Delphi in Greece or Cumae in Italy. There were a number of them all throughout Egypt and really all throughout the ancient world. And you can think of these mystery schools as almost basically spiritual universities, like an Ivy League of spirituality, and they all had you know, a number of things in common with each other. And this tradition was not really a religion, but it was more a spiritual orientation that runs through most religions. And it was it's a little complex, but a very abbreviated description would really tell us that human beings are physical entities that are containing projections of God's own spiritual essence. Now, that is something radically different from what most of us as Christians or Judeo-Christian tradition were taught to believe, which is that human beings were sort of this kind of lump of clay that God created, you know, ex nihilo or out of nothing. and were somehow granted life force. But the fact that the divine intelligence and the divine essence actually dwells within each human being, I think, is a very empowering notion that, that makes us really, in theory, much more than we think we are. And this whole idea was sort of, I guess, without going into too much detail and putting everybody to sleep, this idea was really probably the underpinning of this ancient spiritual tradition, which was very feminine in orientation, incidentally, using the intuitive, creative type of the feeling-based sort of thinking that is more characteristic of the feminine way. And it was part of early Christianity, and it's a part, it's a legacy that was really destroyed by the church. And what I might speak about, if you have a minute, is how we recovered how we maybe recovered some knowledge of this tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Some of the listeners may be familiar with some of the finds that occurred back in the deserts of the Middle East in the 1940s. One of the big ones was the Nag Hammadi Gospels, which were called the Gnostic Gospels. And the Gnostic Gospels were, some of them actually were almost incorporated into the Synoptic Gospels, but at the end of the day they were outlawed and branded as heresy by the church. But Gnostics were essentially, Gnostics comes from the Greek word to know, and the Gnostics were a long line of mystics who were pre-Christian and Christian. When Christianity came along, they readily embraced the Christian story, but they had a different take on it than Orthodox Christianity. One of the things, a couple of the characteristics of the Gnostic Gospels is that rather than the male disciples and St. Peter being sort of the leader amongst the disciples, it gives a picture of the female disciples who we've lost in history, and Mary Magdalene being the foremost disciple rather than Peter. The one who really got Jesus's very deep spiritual esoteric message, whereas most of the males didn't really understand the essence of it. The other interesting thing, and Iggy, you kind of alluded to this when you're talking about the sweat lodges, about the male and female energies. Jesus in the Gnostic Gospels always emphasizes one thing: the two must become one. And what he meant was that that the universe, the apparent universe, is composed of polar energies that we can call male and female, and that in order for us to become whole human beings, we have to incorporate those energies within each of us so that we balance our linear, rational thinking side with our intuitive, heartfelt side, and that by using those faculties together, we can then really unlock the divine potential within all of us and have very particular experiences. Much like I told you I had when I was doing the intuitive medical readings, they unlock actual experiences within you that really have you say, now I know there's something divine out there. It's not fear anymore, but I've gone through it. I've felt the light. I've walked through it.
Wow. This, I love the way this conversation is unfolding because it's bringing me into alignment with a lot of my own belief systems. So, you know, not that I would not be okay with that, but I just happen to really follow what you're saying with the tone of this book is to bring the awareness of the importance of both, you know, because throughout history, the divine feminine has been out of alignment, I guess, in so many of our lives and so many of in the collective and so forth. So, you know, this concept is really prominent in this age as far as with the onset of the 2012 and so forth, because a lot of the energies that I think they're already here, number one, they're going to be in full blown consciousness as time progresses. But this is what we're talking about, I believe, with these new energies. It's really not new. It's just bringing them into balance.
Yes, I think that's true. And another thing I noticed as we near 2012 is that so many people that I talk to in the spiritual community or spiritual circles have kind of made a little bit of a similar transition to what I experienced, which is that a lot of healers who have been doing one-on-one work are saying, you know what, this is great, but what I'd rather do is train a core of other healers to do what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I just had the privilege of meeting a gentleman from upstate New York, and he does tremendous energy healing work. And he really has a grand vision of opening up a whole, essentially, academy where he is training people in doing the type of very effective type of energy healing that he's doing. It was the same way with me. I did intuitive medical readings. I didn't charge people in those days. I was just kind of a poor student, and I did it because I had people lined up at the door in those days asking, you know, for help, and I did it. But, mm-hmm. you know, I sort of realized later in life that one-on-one work is great, but I think the way I'd really rather help people is to reach a broader audience. And when I looked around, I saw a lot of people doing that in the literary world on a non-fictional basis. So you have, you know, the Wayne Dyers, the Deepak Chopra, mm-hmm. the Carolyn Maces, and they're all doing that stuff probably a lot better than I could. But the contribution that I felt that I could make was that, you know, with my writing ability, is, you know, to really do a story about that. Even though the story is fictional, it's based on so many historical facts it's a very practical book that I think can really give people a new perspective on spirit, especially from the standpoint that we've been taught in the Judeo-Christian world that's been, you know, kind of drilled into us, that it can get us out of that box and look at our own spiritual life in a completely different way. But at the end of the day, to take responsibility for our own spiritual life and understand what it means to grow spiritually within each of us. So I felt my contribution could be more on a mass level if I wrote a very entertaining, and this, incidentally, this is, everybody that's read it says, this is really a page turner. This is a thriller. Mm-hmm. So the book is kind of schizophrenic in that it's both a, you know, something that could be a Hollywood movie, but it's also something that could be very well embraced by the spiritual community.
Absolutely. It's entertaining. It reaches a wide, broad audience. It's going to captures people. The title itself is enough to kind of get you going. What was that? And wait, she's African-American?
Yeah.
Okay. It's enough to make you do a double take, that's for sure. And going back to the, you know, this theme keeps on coming back. Spirit keeps on guiding me to talk about this, you know, this interconnectedness, the fact that we're interconnected with ourselves. But, you know, the greater concept too is the fact that we're never disconnected from source or God or universe, whatever you want to call that, the source that created all, is something that a lot of times what I find, and this is more of a observation based on my experience, is that oftentimes religions will often act as an intermediary to your spirituality, whereas now I think people are realizing, and through this book as well, is that they can speak directly or have this direct connection, because you never was disconnected to begin with.
Yeah, and I think that's very true. And, you know, I see a lot of books out there that are religion-bashing books. You know, they kind of tee off on the Catholic Church and all the, you know, the sins
sure.
of the past and everything. And sure, there were a lot of things involved there, but I think the way I look at it, and I think the way the ancient Gnostics looked at it, was that the outer religions, what they would call the orthodox or outer part of the religion, was mm-hmm. a stepping stone to the deeper
yeah.
inner parts of it. And that's the sort of thrust of my book here. You know, Annalisa does not, well, I don't want to give away too much of the plot of the book. I was just
right.
about to say that by saying something.
But I will
say that one of the really cool things about this ancient spiritual tradition is it's a marriage of psychic insight with modern science. It's really fascinating that 2,000 years ago, these ancient mystics that practiced this tradition actually came up with insights that parallel our most advanced modern scientific discoveries. Now, let me give you a couple examples of that. The ancients said that matter is a gross crystallized form of higher energy. Well, that's exactly what the equation E equals mc squared means, that matter and energy are interchangeable. The ancients said that our universe was emanated or projected from a series of what they called eons, which were pre-existing universes. That is the parallel universe theory, that we live side by side with other dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
The Big Bang. In the ancients said the material universe was expelled from 10 or more higher eons or dimensions. And the Big Bang says exactly the same thing, that our visible universe was a contraction of 10 or more dimensions down to 3 dimensions. In the field of psychology, when Carl Jung saw the writings of the Gnostics and the other ancient mystics, he was shocked that so many of their ideas in there predated his depth psychology. That when he first read the Gnostic Gospels, he said, "I finally found a home." Now, how could this be? How could it be that, you know, these guys, who some people said, well, you know, maybe these guys were smoking desert weed with all these they were having out there in the Middle East, but they came up with the same conclusions 2,000 years ago that modern science is making today about the nature of human beings and reality. So clearly what they discovered wasn't fantasy. There's a difference between psychic insight, genuine psychic insight, and fantasy. Mm-hmm. And they were coming up with truths that they tapped from the universal source that science is now bearing out 2,000 years later. And perhaps we all come closest to the truth at the intersection of where science and those ancient mystics are meeting.
Mm-hmm. It's a good way to take a 30-second break. We take a 30-second break, half point in our show. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. More conversations with Peter Casanova.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com and WithInsights.com, your free online holistic publication resource magazine for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. Please feel free to explore our daily inspirational quotes and uplifting stories, exclusive interviews with local world-known inspirational leaders.
Welcome back to WithInsightsRadio.com with E. Garcia and Rosabel. And our guest today is Peter Canova, and he is talking to us about his book, Pope Analisa. And I think we can actually find information at www.popeanalisa.com, and I think that's where you have trailers and stuff there, correct, Peter?
Yes, correct.
It's a really cool website because it has actual video production that's really professional, I have to say, and it's very suspenseful and drama-filled, so definitely check it out for yourself, people. I'll go ahead and put that on the chat here so people know what we're talking about to get more information. So when we took our break, we were just talking about, and I hear this often on With Insights Radio, people who have been involved with spirituality and walk all kinds walks of life, we are kind of saying similar things, just different kind of ways of communicating, expressing ourselves, which I think is really cool. When we boil down to it, you know, I find that, you know, if we start a conversation with open hearts, open ears, open mind, without any preconceived notion, if you just give a person enough time to express themselves and you just open your heart, you really find out we're all kind of really saying the same thing at the end of the day, for the most part. That's been my experience on the guests that we've had on the show and the themes and so forth. And that's what I'm hearing today, is that with your book, you've chosen to be in service to share what you feel is a great truth, a great... it's just a different way of sharing it, a truth that's been around for ages and ages and ages. But you bring a different spin to it, a different way of communicating with your vehicle of writing. That sounds like very entertaining as far as the way you're a good storyteller, I have to tell you that, just even having a conversation with you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
I think that this is something, well, let me tell you, folks, writing is a tough business. Don't go into it if you want to make money. I was just doing my tax returns the other day, and the balance sheet was a little crazy. But, you know, I think with writing, it's almost something you have to do. It's something that, you know, you have a burning desire to share something with other people. And in this case, I wanted to share my experiences that altered the course of my life in hopes that something in this body of work in the trilogy might trigger that exploration in other people. And I think that people at all different spiritual levels can read this book. I mean, some people will read it and they'll just like the story. Other people will read it really for the spiritual, whatever spiritual wisdom there is, within the trilogy. But from my standpoint, yeah, I really did do this because I felt that I just had my way of service, at least at this stage of my life. At one time, it was a one-on-one type of thing. At this stage of my life, it's more like reaching a mass audience and hoping that I can just get them to think about the very fundamentals of life in a different way than they may be accustomed to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very good. We did have some people that had some questions on the blog. So we just ask, if you have any questions, people, please feel free to type in your questions to Mr. Canova on the blog, and we'll see what happens there. But in the meantime, we've got some little chats going on and so forth in the chat room. So keep on chatting away, people. If you have any comments, please feel free to post them there, and we'll continue this conversation. So, you know, you recently won two awards, and I was just wondering, what has been your, I guess, biggest surprises in as you've written this book? What have been some of the things, from people who've read your book or the media and so forth? What are some of your biggest surprises that you've experienced so far?
Well, I think that the most daunting task when I wrote this book was how to take very complex ancient spiritual ideas that were written in original Greek or Coptic, which I fortunately do read Greek, so I was able to read some of them in the originals, to take these very complex ideas and translate them into a story that didn't end up being like a dull, preachy research text. And I tried very hard to balance between making an entertaining story, because I don't care how spiritual you are. You know, if you're going to read a fictional book and it's boring, you're not going to get to the part that you want to get to, because you're probably going to put it down and pick up something else. That's just an axiom of the literary world. So I kind of was waiting with bated breath as the story, as the book started to circulate, to see the reaction of different people. And I was extremely pleased. I'm not sure if I'd say surprised, but I was extremely pleased to see that people from all walks of life are picking this up. And, you know, if you read, let's say, some of the reviews on Amazon.com, you get a full spectrum. You're getting some people there that, you know, clearly are very spiritually clued in, but you're getting others who just enjoyed it for the pleasure of reading the book. You traditional Catholics who have read it and said, you know, I thought this was going to be, I talked to my friends and they were abhorred when they heard of the idea of a female pope. How could that be? In reading the context of the book, everything seems so believable. And that was probably the most pleasing thing to me, is to see something that I was so conscious of and worked so hard to balance, that it seems like that balance worked there, and it can be absorbed by a lot of different people. You know, when I watched Star Wars, you know, they had, you know, in Star Wars the whole thing about Luke, the Force is with you, and it became sort of part of pop culture. Well, in its own little way, Star Wars contributed to the idea that there was a force out there that people could tap into. Of course, they didn't go into it too deeply. The trilogy and Pope Annalisa go into it much more depth and you know, I think with a lot more clarity and insight to it. But it's still the same principle that I think that this book can be read by a wide variety of people, and each will absorb the message at their own level, where they are at the time, and whatever, you know, kind of help or insights they need, hopefully they can find it in this book.
That's good. So definitely, I get that feeling that you are not a controversial kind of person, number one. I can just feel that in the conversation. So I definitely don't get that that's your intention to cause a ruckus or anything. It's more like, hey, let's get some... let's get some wisdom. Let's in a different way. That's kind of maybe not your traditional way to get it across. And I think it's really cool and creative and just really insightful.
Absolutely.
Of you do that. So that's cool.
I was curious, you know, Peter, I was curious too, you know. I mean, I was almost feeling like maybe you tapped into a parallel universe that you may not even been aware of.
In terms of
in your book, you know, you pick, you know, there's so many universes that play out, so many you know, possibilities that you maybe the inspiration for your book. I mean, you know, I believe
I think
I believe people get threatened by books like this because they, you know, on a deeper level, they, you know that they know. That they know nothing.
Well, sometimes I think anytime people, you know, lock into an identity of who they believe they are and another belief system comes across that might not match up with their identity of who they think they are, it's threatening to them because that means they have to change and I'll have to, you know, look at themselves or maybe look at their situation a little differently. And, you know, in the whole scheme of things.
That's really very true what you said. I'll tell you something very interesting. We have some old family friends from the time I was young, and they are fundamentalists. And they found out about my book, and they wanted a copy of it, which I sent out to them with a huge disclosure statement in it saying, look, guys, you know, I know how you feel about things, and this may not be your cup of tea. I just want to tell you right now. Well, they love the book. They could hardly wait to read the second one. I wrote in the afterword of the book something that I did address to more orthodox practitioners of religion, whether they're Jewish or Christian or whatever, in that you know, the book was not meant to be an attack on people's existing beliefs, because if your beliefs are that entrenched, you're going to read the book and you're going to say, well, this is a lot of rubbish and I don't believe that anyway. If you have a little bit of an open mind to it, I think the book does present another vector of spirituality for people to look at. And Iggy, what you said about parallel universes, it's kind of true, because quantum physics really tells us that what exists outside there is potential, and what we focus on is actually what our minds and our hearts, and incidentally, that's something a lot of people in the spiritual community forget. They think of manifesting things, you know, by creative, you know, their intention and you know, their mind and affirmations, which are all good, but that's only half the equation. If we're going to talk about the female half, you must have that desire. You must have a deep desire in your heart, because desire is the fuel that gets you. The guidance system may be your rational mind, but the fuel that gets you to your objective is the desire. So if you have the desire and you have a clarity of if you've defined what you want by your rational means, then that's a powerful bullet that reaches into the world of potential and brings it into reality. And quantum physics essentially tells you the same thing. So, you know, I'm hoping that some of that rubs off on people even with more orthodox orientations, and they can just get out of the box just a little bit to see that, you know what, this might be another possibility. And one thing I stress in this book is, my vision in this book, I'm not necessarily saying these are the way things are. I think that would be pretty arrogant and presumptive, because, you know, there's so much mystery in the universe and there's so much mystery to spirituality that I think the best we can do is be in the road in a process. And I'm constantly changing things I used to believe, you know, a year ago. I've changed a little bit on those things, and because I'm constantly growing in knowledge and awareness and experience. And so I'm not trying to pretend that what I'm presenting in this book is the be-all and end-all and some kind of a new religion that people ought to start following in place of what they have already. What I'm saying is, take what you have already, consider it a stepping stone, use the background that brought you to where you are, but now here's something else you might want to think about and digest with your meal.
Yes, yes. That's how I'm taking this conversation, absolutely. And I believe our listeners, people that tune into With Insights Radio, get that message, definitely. And for all you listeners out there that did not catch this broadcast or are listening later, and if you find this message compelling, you know, pass it on. I am actually going to recommend this book for a women's reading group that I belong to. And I think this would be just, it's so cool to just talk on the archetypal meaning. And just so I can just see the richness of this book has to offer just talking to you, because, you know, just getting to know you, Peter, you've got just I can feel you've got a lot of depth to you. You know, you're pretty lived it, experienced it, and some of the things that you're saying are just really resonating with me tonight. So I'm really excited about this. So one thing, I know you don't want to give away too much of the book, because, of course, we want people to go out there and read the book. You know, I am just curious, and I just kind of already know you're not going to tell me. How did Pope Annalisa, being in this entrenched, I guess, and I shouldn't say that word, entrenched, so like, yeesh, so dramatic, Rosa, but I guess, how did she, what did she do to win the hearts of the cardinals and everything like that to even get into that position?
Well, let me use this as a segue to give the listeners a little bit of a quick overview of the plot line of the book.
Sure.
Pope Annalisa is really two stories. We talked a lot about the spiritual side of it, but let's talk about the other side of it. It's a thriller, and it's set in the near future. Annalisa is a miracle-working African nun in the year 2025, and it's a world where resources of oil and water are scarce. Iran has gone nuclear. Friction between great powers is close to boiling over. And in her healings down in Africa, Annalisa is really acting outside of the control of the church. And some Muslims are also converting because of her healing. So she's upsetting the power structure of both the Catholic Church and the Islamic terrorists in Nigeria. And Nigeria, even today, it has always been a flashpoint of tensions between Christianity and Islam. It's the largest, it's the most populous country in Africa, and about half the country is Muslim, and the other half is a Christian. And it's kind of the borderline, let's say, between a lot of the tensions that are happening between the religions. But there's a body of Catholic prophecy that's predicted the rise of a great heretic who is going to destroy the church from within and lead the world to ruin. So many of the cardinals, when they hear about what she's doing, these incredible healings that she's performing in Africa, are immediately suspicious of her. I won't give you the exact details, because that would be giving away something. It's
spoiled again.
Through a series of events.
I'm teasing you.
Beginning with her healing the existing pope from some severe illness, she's brought into the ranks of the church, and as you can imagine, she's brought in grudgingly. I think probably there's only a couple people that were really supportive of bringing her into the priesthood. But the real event that launches her into the papacy is something that occurs in the Sistine Chapel during when the Pope dies, and there's a conclave to elect a new Pope. Something very astonishing happens in the Sistine Chapel, and I'm going to leave you hanging at that point, because that's sort of the linchpin that launches off the rest of the plotline of the book.
That's cool. No, I'm seriously going to recommend this book for our reading group, so that's okay. I was going to just try to see what I can squeeze out. No, I'm just kidding. That's good. That's good. That keeps us going. Iggy, do we have any callers? Any questions? Anybody?
Yeah, one second. Let me patch one through here real quick.
Okay.
Hello, caller. You're online.
Hi. My name is Cindy, and I just have a very quick question. Mr. Canova, is your book anything like The Da Vinci Code? And if it's not, how is it different?
Yeah, Cindy, I have had people ask me that question before. It has superficial similarities to The Da Vinci Code in that, it's a thriller and it deals with religious/spiritual topics, and probably the only other tie between the two books is that the personage of Mary Magdalene plays a role in both books. The difference is that in The Da Vinci Code, The Da Vinci Code really kind of goes along the bloodline theory, which is that Mary Magdalene and Jesus, had progeny, had children, and that Mary was depicted in The Da Vinci Code as the Holy Grail, which is the receptacle of, Jesus' children. In my book, Mary Magdalene is also the Holy Grail, but it takes on a much different meaning. Mary is the Holy Grail of Jesus' gnosis, the secret spiritual traditions that he taught orally, which were obscured by the church, and of which Mary was the greatest proponent and understood them with the most clarity. That's why she was his most trusted disciple and his companion. So Mary, in my book, is also the Holy Grail, but really the repository, not of his children, but the repository of something much more important, which was this spiritual knowledge of which Jesus was teaching, that was part of the whole continuum that went back through ancient Sumeria and all the ancient cultures. And I think that puts her as a woman in a much more important role than just being a child bearer.
Well, thank you.
I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Ellen. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it did. Thank you very much.
Excellent question, caller. Thank you for calling.
Very good. You want to take another one?
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, we have a couple minutes left. Caller, are you there?
Yes. Am I here?
Yeah.
Oh. Yes, you're on with Insights Radio.
You're on. You have a question?
Well, I just wanted to thank Peter for validating some of my own research in my own life, especially with talking about us all being part of the one creator or God source, whatever you'd like to call it. Just wanted to thank you, Peter.
Well, thank you for sharing the sentiment.
Yeah,
cool.
I was really amazed that some of the things I've found, and you were talking about the same things, and it's going to be a really interesting awakening for people when it starts to come forth more.
Yeah, I think that we're in the age right now where that whole quickening of knowledge is going to be accelerated. I think that's a lot of what 2012 was about. And incidentally, you've probably seen the Hollywood version of 2012, which is that we're all gone, the world's going to end. And the world is going to end, but not that way.
The world is going to end as we know it.
The old knowledge base and power structures are going to end. And incidentally, that's a lot of what Annalisa represents, isn't it, really? She's the end of the male line of popes. She's the beginning, just by that fact alone that she becomes pope is the beginning of a new way. So that's
kind of
reflective of what we're talking about.
So
very
cool.
Good.
Such an appropriate time as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I might mention at this point, let me go from the sublime to the crass at this point, just to tell the readers that the book is currently, right now, the publication date of the book is June 2010, but the advanced copies of the book, I did an advanced test market, and that's the hardcover book that's available on my website right now, and the paperback version is currently available through Amazon.com or Borders.com. BarnesandNoble.com. All you have to do is go to the Amazon or Borders sites and type Pope Annalisa into the search bar, and you're able to purchase the paperback version. The hardcover version is going to be coming out June 10th, and I'm having my big publicity push has actually already started and centered in New York, but culminating on June 1st. And I was very happy, as you've mentioned already, I just found out the book won 2 Nautilus Awards today, which was very timely, and I'll find out next month whether or not it's won the Gold Award. But anyway, just for the readers, if you want the softcover version, it's already available. If you want to wait for the hardcover version, which I greatly appreciate to help my boost in the literary world, that will be available in bookstores by June 1st.
All right.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, wonderful. Mr. Knievel, it was a great pleasure. Iggy and I are very grateful to have you on with Insights Radio. You sharing your story, get to know you, the person, the author behind the trilogy, that actually, but the first one, Pope Annalisa.
Yes, and let me thank you for having me on the show and thank the listeners for participating in this and allowing me to share what I hope that they'll eventually read.
Sure. Is there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave our listeners with at this moment in time?
I would have to assume that from the nature of your show, you have people who are pretty advanced in their you know, their spiritual journey. And the only thing that I can emphasize to you is that I know along the way there are setbacks. I've had plenty of them. I know struggling to birth this book, you cannot believe what it's like. I think I'm beginning to figuratively understand what women's labor pains are like trying to birth this book.
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah. But you know, don't give up on your journey, because it really is a process. The important thing is that sometimes it may seem to you like the answers that you thought were answers, you know, you change your mind, you say, wow, should I throw out the baby with the bathwater? Is everything I believed in good for nothing? Because now I've changed my perspective. Don't view it that way. I've been through that. I don't know how many times in the course of this book. It's a journey. It's a process. And the important thing is you're on that road.
Excellent.
Wonderful.
We want to thank you again. I mean, it was awesome. It was good to hear and just sit back and listen.
Thank you all.
So super.
Okay,
thank you.
Talk to you
evening.
Soon then.
We'll talk to you
Bye-bye.
Soon. Bye. Wow. Another great show with Insights Radio, you know, speaking of the Divine Feminine and actually during the sweat, it was I believe it was, I'm not sure which door actually it was, but I just started, you know, form of channeling, I guess, but I did start, there's a lot of divine, I shouldn't say a lot, but a majority of the people that were in the sweat were women, but it was for the most part pretty, well, more women, but there was a point where I felt like Mary Magdalene energy was there with us in that sweat.
Wow.
I don't know if you remember me saying that, but I kept on saying Magdalena. I didn't say Mary Magdalene. I don't know where that was coming from, and coincidentally, you know, we're speaking about this topic today, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
how
it's
spirit
pretty
works.
Interesting. Yeah, it's really interesting how things just come to our show sometimes, and then how, you know, the highest purpose is always served when we're doing our show. We kind of follow a script, but we, you know, I'm going to stop writing scripts and notes, because it never goes that way. It goes the way.